This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on 104.5 The Zone.
Out of the gates and ready for the second hour, Wednesday edition, Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, online edleysbbq.com. You can download the Edley's app for the entire menu. It's all delicious. Curbside pickup ordering is available. And yes, they deliver through Postmates. Alongside Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet, Paul Kuharski in Brentwood, David Reed is the chairman of the board in Nashville. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro, saying hello to Doug Matthews, who is always on the road with us, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. There's no need to consult the playbook. The winning play is to always designate a sober driver. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Doug, good morning.
Good morning. Good to actually see you all.
Yes. How about this Zoom? We make the transition, and now all of our guests are available via virtual Zoom. It's perfect.
I've had a couple of other of these with us on some business dealings, and it really is. I know we talk about this, but it really is amazing what technology you can do right now, you know, to have audio that really sounds like you're in the studio. Quite frankly, and that's pretty darn good.
We just chatted with Trey Perry, head coach at Mount Juliet, about the TSSAA and the fact that the governor, Governor Lee, has allowed them to have full padded practices as soon as this is signed in, and it sounds as though we're going on August 21st for high school football on Friday nights. I'm curious what you've heard this week about the SEC. I know the presidents are scheduled to meet this week. That meeting is going on. So when do you expect that decision to be made?
Well, the target date really has been going all the way back into June, somewhere around the 31st, the last day of July. And when they talked about this, it's always been the same conversation. It may have gone in a little bit different direction, but always around the 31st, maybe a few days after that, maybe a few days before. I would expect right now, John, it could happen the 31st, but what Commissioner Sankey has made very clear is that they are going, and as a matter of fact, the ACC commissioner and the Big 12 commissioner have all done this pretty much in unison. They're going to push this as far as they can into August before they make the decision. Knowing this, that all of the templates are in place for whatever the season amount of games it is, whether it be on the high end 12 and on the low end 0, most likely it's going to be an 8 or a 9 or a 10 game schedule. Could be 12, but I'd say one of those three probably more likely right now. All those are set in place right now. I think they even have the games that they're probably going to play if it's a 8 conference games plus one or an 8 conference season plus two. I think they already have those pretty much penciled in. It's just a matter of, all right, when are we going to play? And of course, as they have said all along, and I think everybody close to this knows, the schedule will determine the start date. If it's 12 games, it's going to start somewhere around the 5th, maybe a week early, as we've seen. If it's, 10 games, 9 games, 8 games, then they can push it back a little bit later if need be. They really have two good things going for them right now. They could have 14 weeks if they move in week early. And they could have 15 weeks if they move the SEC championship game back to play whatever number of games they're going to play. So they could have 14 weeks to play 12 games or 10 or 9 or 8. So they got some pretty good options right now.
So Oklahoma is the one team we know right now moving that game up a week. So they now get a bye, theoretically, if everything goes off without a hitch before they play Tennessee. The NCAA has the waiver now where every team could do that. Doug, what do you think about teams doing that? Giving themselves, as you talked about with that schedule, a little bit more of a cushion, but also giving every team the chance to play a game, see what happens in terms of testing and everything else, and then have a week off before your next game, almost a trial run for everyone in college football to see what it looks like and then sort of troubleshoot from that point on before going into the rest of your schedule.
Well, they've certainly given conferences that choice. I don't think it's going to make much of a difference at all because right now, and this is just my gut feeling, I don't think you're going to see non-conference games that are not against Power 5 conference teams. That game with Oklahoma was a non-Power 5 team. I think you're going to see probably a 10-game schedule. Remember, the Big 12 plays nine conference games, so they would only have to add one game. In Oklahoma's case, that could very easily be the University of Tennessee because they're scheduled to play right now. So I don't read much into that. And, you know, I've gone back over the years, and I remember talking to a lot of coaches, and, of course, when I was coaching, do you want to open up with a tough opponent? You know, there were years when I was coaching at Tennessee, we opened up with Southern Cal, and there were years when we opened up with Colorado State. And really, your team kind of knows who you're playing. You know, they knew when we were playing Southern Cal that we had to be ready to play. So I don't think that will have much of an effect on. And really, I think if you've kind of followed Riley, you know, Coach Riley, he didn't want to bring anybody in ever before the 1st of July. I think it just gives him another little option to work with there. But I do not believe it's going to have any effect on the season by any particular team at all.
If it's a 10-game season, like you said, as an option. So you're right in that a lot of the Big 12 teams that already have, there's four of them that have scheduled games in the SEC, so they'd be taken care of with nine conference games. And then in Oklahoma's case, the Tennessee game, they're done with 10 games. Tennessee, on the other hand, are SEC teams. Eight conference games, that one Power 5 opponent. If there is some sort of agreement between ACC, Big 12, and SEC, how do you think they come to that 10th game, Coach? And what I mean by that is, does Tennessee have to play Boston College, or does Tennessee have to play Clemson if they're already playing Oklahoma? I'm sure coaches would love to have a say in that, or will it just simply be, okay, here's what's available this week, and we're going to put this together like a jigsaw puzzle and not really keep in mind anything about your strength of schedule or anything else. We're just getting that 10th game.
Well, let's just take it from a Southeastern Conference perspective, because they have eight games. So if they go to a 10-game schedule and if they go to a Power 5 schedule only, they would have to pick up 28 total games. Currently, there are 13 games scheduled between the ACC and the Big 12. That are already scheduled. So that would mean you would have to find another, 15, right? And keep in mind, too, that Missouri has a game with BYU. So I think you can throw BYU in there, and I think you can throw Notre Dame in there because they're going to be looking for games also. So,
and they're playing Arkansas.
I don't think it'll be that difficult. Let's just take Georgia, for example. Georgia, of course, will have their eight conference games. They have a game, as always, scheduled against Georgia Tech, and this year they have Virginia scheduled. So they could have their 10 games right there. So if they decide to go that route, I do not think it'll be a big problem. And I do think that you're going to see the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 all working together on this. I would be willing to bet that if they decide to go conference only, then they'll go conference only. If they decide to go conference plus, then they'll all go conference plus. And remember it again, the Big 12 already has nine, so they do not have to pick up but one. And again, Notre Dame has that connection. The ACC has come out very strongly and said that they will do everything they can to help Notre Dame get ball games because they play six against them normally anyway.
We're talking college football with Doug Matthews. You can join him, 615-737-1045, our number on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Coming up, we will get into Ohio State. Their attendance is at 20% capacity. We'll ask Doug if Nealon could look similar. And the NFL is ramping up with conditioning. We'll compare that to what college football has been doing for the last month and what it means for their entry into practices, preparing for the season. Doug Matthews with us here on 104.5 The Zone.
Let's go. The NHL is back, and the Predators are returning to the ice in a best-of-five Stanley Cup qualifier series against the Arizona Coyotes. Get instant Preds playoff reaction, not to mention that you'll get to react to it here before anywhere else on your home for the best Predators coverage, 104.5 The Zone.
Certainly glad you're with us. Doug Matthews with us as well. We go on the road with him each Wednesday, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. We'll say that Greg Cosell is coming up today at 12:15. Ingle Martin will be on the show as well to get the private school perspective from the head coach there at CPA. He will be with us today at 1 o'clock, plus primary complaint. 615-737-1045. Our number if you'd like to talk college football. Another big segment here with Coach Matthews. Doug, there are clearly two groups right now with college football. The administrators who are making the decision on when to play and how many games, and then everyone else on the football staff. How difficult do you think it would be right now as a coach to just keep your head down, or maybe not even a coach, just a staff member, to keep your head down and look at what you would expect to be a normal schedule given all the circumstances and outside factors?
Well, that's where the leadership from the head football coach, and in some instances the athletic director, but certainly the head football coach comes right now, because it's just like you said, Jonathan, it's all that anybody other than the athletic director and whatever administrator at the school is working with. Maybe it's the chancellor, maybe it's a vice chancellor. All you can do is just, I would kind of equate it to what we're doing right now. You know, David Reeves producing the show. We're not producing the show. Now, we may have an opinion on it. He may take it or may not take it. But the bottom line is, as a coach, you just simply have to literally do what your job is. And right now, they are preparing for a 12-game season. They are doing everything that they normally do. You do your scouting report. Most people do about the first 5-game scouting report. They don't do the whole year, because even conference games, things change midway through if games change. Different players change. So that's what they're doing right now. And they've had a big jump. Listen, they've had these players around a lot longer than they normally would. Now, yes, they didn't have a spring practice, and no, there are not some things that they cannot do. But by and large, they've been able to watch them, look at them. You know, they probably haven't talked to them as much as they would like, but they probably talked to them more than they're supposed to. So they're in really good shape right now. They really are.
Well, and I was asked recently, what will the ramp up to play be like for college football players? But if you really look at the schedule, what the NFL is about to go through with the conditioning, college football has been doing for the last month. I mean, they got that in.
And they've been doing exactly what they've done every year for the last 30 years. Football does not start, practice does not start until 29 days before the opening game. So that would be somewhere around what August, depending on, some teams are playing a little earlier than the 5th. But it'd be somewhere around the 8th anyway. So they're right on pace with everything. They're probably a little bit ahead of pace right now because they haven't been doing any outside-the-road recruiting where they've been on the road. So there's not a single coaching staff out there that would have any complaint about not being ready to go. Everybody's going to be in the same boat. Nobody's going to be have any advantage over anybody else. Whenever they start, they're going to start. But right now, unlike pro football and some of the pro sports, they're on pace right now because there's nothing that they could have done from an athletic standpoint earlier than they have been doing. They've done everything right on schedule so far.
We've known that the Big Ten will be a conference-only schedule this upcoming season, and yesterday we saw the story and the announcement from Ohio State that it will be a 20% capacity at the Horseshoe. When you saw that, did you think, oh, maybe this is what we'll see at the Power Five schools? And I immediately think of Neyland Stadium. Have you heard anything like that in your recent conversations with people on the Hill?
I talked to Coach Fulmer just on a personal matter about a week ago, and I asked him, started the conversation, what are you up to? You know, like just a general greeting. And he said, I'm trying to figure out how to get 75,000 people in Neyland Stadium. So at that time, he was thinking about that. I don't think he was joking on that, but I think all these guys are realistic. 50% is probably maybe a possibility. I think 25% in that range somewhere is more of a possibility. So now they're having to really work on, okay, if it is 50% or if it's 25%, where do we move people? And, you know, some people, quite frankly, don't want to move. If you've got a 50-yard line season ticket on the west side, yeah, of the shade, you're probably not going to want to move to the other side. So, you know, that's – but I will say this. He told me this, and I've talked to other people the same thing. That right now is the least of their concerns. Not that – you know, they want fans there. They're concerned about that. They want to have 7 home games. They're concerned about that. But right now it's what is the schedule – and when can we start? It's not how many fans can we get in the stadium. That will be easily worked into whenever the time comes for that.
Doug Matthews with us. Designate a sober game plan. If you've been drinking, don't drive. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk.
Coach, with the SEC's approach to wait and see and look at what things look like either end of this week or next week, as you said, the approach of waiting and seeing in terms of fan attendance also, I guess a question, and this would be a good one for Coach Fulmer, but how much notice would these schools need in order to make it work? Because it seems that the longer you wait, the more clear picture you're going to have about how many fans you can have. For instance, with Ohio State doing this now, well, what if things get a lot better in the next month and they could have half capacity or 75% capacity? Could you make a decision a week or two out if you're Tennessee or the SEC and say, hey, things look better, we can have half capacity now at games? Or is that, do you think, tough for the schools to make work with such short notice?
Chad, that is already built in. They know what they're going to do with 100%, 50%, 25%. My assumption is that somewhere after the first of the year, they've already let the season ticket holders know that if we don't have a season, you know, here's how you got several options which you can do with your tickets. And I'm assuming I know that somewhere the first part of August, they'll let them know what the possibilities are going to be. But what they have done is it's just like scheduling a practice. They already have all of those options there. So if it's 25%, let's just take Tennessee, but you can say any of the schools, they know what that 25%, what that base is that they're going to work out. They know where they're going to put them. They know their options they're going to give them. So all that's already been done. It's just now, you know, the ingredients are there to make the cake. They just need to know when to start making the cake.
Doug, what will be the process of players opting out? Have you had discussions about that? We know the process of the NFL. We're seeing that trickle out through teams now as players report for camp. Do you think that process has already taken place internally with programs, or is that about to take place when players report? Or I know they've already reported, but they actually come to practice.
I'm sure that's been talked about a lot, especially with the ones that you know have some type of condition, you know, either an injury or some type of respiratory. The doctors have already, I'm sure, approached that with them on that. And, one thing that the NCAA has done, and I'm sure you all talk about this, maybe didn't, you know, they've already said, listen, if you opt out, you can use that as a redshirt year. And no problem, stay on scholarship, no problem with that at all. And that's the right thing to do. What has not been said, though, is what if a player who has already redshirted wants to opt out? Or what if a player like Brandon Kennedy, who is actually in his sixth year, what if he wants to opt out? They have not said that yet. And that tells me that is still probably being kicked around, because you would think that if that had already been decided, they would announce that at the same time when they said that you can take a redshirt year. My guess is when it's all said and done, you're not talking about very many players at all. My guess is that you will, in all likelihood, they will in all likelihood say, hey, if you don't play this year and you had a year's eligibility in 2020, you can play in 2021 if you choose.
615-737-1045, our number. I'm sure you've seen the story of what's going on at Arizona State with the non-revenue sports. And it's really a handful of them. So the swimming and diving team at Arizona State, they decided not to have a season. And so what they're doing, they are redshirting their entire team. So you get the extra year of eligibility. I'm curious your thoughts on that. If you think we may see that for the non-revenue sports, where we see the red shirts handed out instead of actually competing in the fall, so that you get the year back and hopefully at this time next year, you're able to compete at full capacity.
Well, a lot, and I think you're probably going to see maybe a little bit more of that if we continue going on this. Let me tell you what brought that about the non-revenue sports. The number one thing about the non-revenue sports that is most costly is travel. So in all likelihood, teams who the swimming and diving, I think probably softball, soccer, other things like that, those teams have to travel a long way. Golf, so mm-hmm. I think probably that had a lot to do with it. Many schools had already said that we're going to play, let's take golf for an example. in our general area. You know, if it's we're going to play somebody in the South where we don't have to travel out to California or even out to Hawaii to play. That, I think, is the reason. It's the non-revenue sports that, and the travel is the main thing on that. And it really makes a lot of sense on that, because I'm sure some of the matches that they have scheduled were going to go away anyway. So to me, that makes a lot of sense.
I think to a lot of people, the red shirt idea sounds so easy, though, but you got to have classes to take and a degree to work toward and all of that stuff, too. So it doesn't do me much good if you're redshirting me if I'm on schedule to graduate, right?
That's right. But I think that almost every school, just like right now, I know this is happening in Tennessee. I'm assuming it's probably happening at most every other SEC school, Power Five school. All those players up there right now are in summer school online. So they're picking up hours. And I think most schools are going to have at least something online to do that. Now, the question would be, And I think we all know football and basketball are probably in a separate category. But the question is, for the non-revenue sports, are they going to be able to stay at home and do that? Are they going to work them on campus? And that's probably going to change campus to campus.
Phone lines are open. If you want to jump in with a college football question for Coach Doug Matthews, 615-737-1045, 737-1045. Coach, a story from The Athletic where Tennessee has this fitness band, similar to a Fitbit but more advanced, called Whoop. And it's a system where the PGA has used it. Rory McIlroy is one of their top spokesmen, I know. Select programs across the country have used it. The NFL is now using it. Tennessee, a couple of weeks ago, became the first full athletic department to use it for every athlete on campus. This, to me, is another example that since Philip Fulmer has taken over, he's not saying no to a lot of things that could help his student athletes on campus. And they've been on the cutting edge of a number of things with the football program and now with the athletic department as a whole, because swimmers and divers at UT now have this band they can wear at all times.
Well, that's an easy expenditure to okay, because that they're all looking at two things right now before we even have the COVID. A is what can we do to help players? And we're seeing that by being the stipends and other things on that, the early transfers and all that. But this is certainly one, too, because this is a health issue. My guess is that probably he had no trouble getting that. Not that he has to go very far to get something approved, but he probably got it funded pretty easily also. But it makes sense. You know, it wasn't all that long ago that they came out with the during practice where they had the shirts they wore underneath that could tell them how much energy you were expanding. So all those things are just pluses, more analytic type stuff and more technology stuff that helps. And don't think for a minute that will not be a big recruiting push from the University of Tennessee also.
Let's talk a little bit on field with Tennessee also. The loss of Emmett Gooden. Getting kicked out of the program, kicked off the team with his issue there. A guy who didn't play a year ago, but yet they were hopeful he could be a big part of that defensive line. How do you factor that in, Coach, when you're looking at a guy who didn't participate a year ago on a defensive line to get better as the year went on and trying to project what type of loss that means for this team moving forward?
Now, they only played one game. I think he got hurt in the first game last year. The year before, his first year at Tennessee, he at the end of the year was really playing at a pretty high level. But if there is a position and that Tennessee has a lot of depth, they had seven seniors in the deep for those three positions anyway. So now they got six and some younger guys there also. They'll probably end up maybe redshirting one or two of those seniors after they see what the rotation is. You know, you don't like to lose a player. One of the things that really caught my eye on that though was that there was almost zero time between when that incident happened and when he was dismissed. So it wasn't one of those cases where the head football coach had to get all the facts or look for the facts. I think they probably had knew exactly what happened there. And it was egregious enough that there wasn't any even discussion about that. That happened almost immediately afterwards. So it had to be a pretty significant and serious infraction.
Doug Matthews with us. You can catch him on the weekends, 9 a.m. Forklift Systems football Saturday, Big Orange Sunday, the best hour-long discussion on the Vols, 8 a.m. Sunday morning.
And the loss of Austin Pope with the back surgery, now out for the season. Also, a thin position already at tight end. What do you see at that position now, and how Jim Chaney might utilize some different pieces to fill that gap?
Well, they lost their really only online blocking tight end with Wood Anderson. All their other players that really have played that position were more H-back type guys. He was a very good football player. Didn't stand out, didn't get thrown a whole lot to, but he's very smart, knew who to block. They could use him in a lot of different ways. My guess is, Chad, that they'll take some of those big body, like maybe Weidman and Beckwith, who will probably play in there as freshmen. They do have some younger guys in there. And then when it comes to blocking, they're probably going to put another offensive lineman out there, quite frankly. But, they're running so much 3 and 4 wide receivers now anyway. The tight end position is not one in college, and particularly at Tennessee, that is really a position that is a high profile position. They really, how far do you have to go back for Tennessee? I guess Rivera maybe, certainly Witten and a few others, but Tennessee's really not had very many what you would call outstanding tight ends.
Doug, you already have a great lineup on Saturday, both just your dialogue and conversation on the show, plus Tony Barnhart and Charles Davis. And starting this weekend, John Chavis makes his debut at 10:30.
I tell you, I don't get excited about much anymore, but I'm really excited for listeners with having John Chavis on. John Chavis has been a defensive coordinator in the Southeastern Conference for over 25 years at 4 different schools. Johnny is extremely intelligent, and I'm going to work with him and use him in a way where we're going to go inside the teams as we get into the season, and a little bit before we'll start this Saturday, on what are you looking for when you have to line up against an Alabama offense or an LSU offense or a Tennessee offense? Because he's done that with all. And I think people are going to find this fascinating because he's agreed to do this. Of course, John worked with when I was a defense coordinator. He was a line coach then, and I've known him for years. Spent many years at Tennessee, player, assistant, and, of course, coordinator. I've worked hard to get him on. He didn't particularly want to do it, but he knows that I'm not going to ask him to pick games or get people fired or talk about coaches. He's going to really delve into the bolts and nuts of defensive football, and he is one of the very, very best we've had in the last quarter century.
Really looking forward to it, and that's
he'll be on every Saturday from 10:30. The lineup's pretty well set now. Tony's going to be on from 9:15 to 10:15. Charles will be on for 15 minutes, and then John Chavis will be on for 15. So we'll have a lot to talk about, I think.
And then you can always, if you miss portions of that show, go to 1045thezone.com for the podcast replay. Doug, thank you as always. Always a great chat with you each Wednesday. We look forward to it.
You bet. We'll see you next week.